Accession number 27070, Reel 3.
Douglas Gerard, Reel 3. So you're in hospital with dysentery?
Yes, I went to hospital on Sunday, August the 9th, with a high temperature. On August the 11th, I was evacuated by ambulance and train to Kantara, number 1 General Hospital. And I was in bed there until the 14th of August. I got up that day on the 14th.
And what sort of treatment did you have?
The hospital there was pretty good. That was pretty good, yes.
Were they giving you drugs or...?
I don't remember what I had, but I obviously got over the bout, and then I was able to go in to where did I go?
Did you rejoin your unit then, or?
No, I was in hospital until the 19th of August. But on the 18th, I walked from the hospital to the Suez Canal that was across the sand. So, and then I was discharged on the 19th of August and was sent to the convalescent depot at El Bala, which is not far away, and I have here the signature of the sister who was in charge at the hospital. Sister somebody Gallagher, 33rd General Hospital, MEO. So she obviously wrote her name in my diary. And then... Well, yes, I got on all right at the hospital. So I went to the convalescent depot, which I didn't like very much because they had us chasing about doing these things. And
what were they trying to get you? That's right.
Well, that was it, yes. It was all pretty useless, pretty stuff. Anyway, I got out of there, got some money, went out of there, and I went for a swim with a South African party. I don't know what that was all about, but I got on the 24th I got a pass to Port Said, where I bought a book, New Paths in Music by Mazel Main, it says here. And on the 25th I reported sick with desert sores.
What are desert sores?
Well, if you get a sore on your leg and it won't heal up. I don't know what it was caused by, but it was quite a lot of it about. And it was on one of my knees, and I forget which was, and it was all bound up with bandages, and I reported sick with desert sores. And I'm not quite sure where that was, but I fancy... I was still at the canal area. It must have been at the convalescent depot. So then I was discharged from there on Friday the 28th of August, and I arrived at a base depot in Cairo, which is a very big base area there. And I met some of my friends there who had been either to hospital or been to a course, and they were arrived at base depot. And I did report again sick with the desert sores, and I went into Cairo with one of my friends, John Wilkes, it says here. And I don't know whether you've seen the film Life Begins with Andy Hardy. Well, there was a series of them. They were very good films. I went to the Slade Club with another guy named Marshall. I shall see him tonight. And I was there again into September.
So this sounds quite leisured. Was this because you were off sick, as it were?
Wherever you'd gone away from the regiment, you usually got back to base depot, and they sent you to wherever the regiment might be, which
yes.
might be anywhere. So you always ended up at base depot before you went back to the unit. And that's where I met quite a number of our chaps, you see. And
so you were having a little break in a way.
That's right. And I went to the Hotel de Rose, and I went to Groppi's. Have you heard of Groppi's?
No.
Oh, well, it's a very well-known restaurant there.
Right.
And what
was the atmosphere like in Cairo? There must have been a lot of military personnel.
Oh, there were. Yes, there were. And some were stationed in there, others were in camps whereabout. We were quite a way out of Cairo, but they provided a lorry transport to take us in and take us back. So I was able to go to Cairo once or twice from there. And also from base depot, you see, that was it was not in the centre of Cairo, but it was near enough to Cairo. So I was at base depot. I was still here with base depot right into September, and I had my watch stolen in Cairo. It says here, it was snatched off my wrist. I was on the tram with my arm on the side, and a guy jumped up and snatched it off. It was a new one too. So I lost my... So there we are.
So eventually you were sent back to your regiment.
Yes, I did meet my tank commander who had been wounded. I met him at base depot.
Who was he?
Mr. Boyd.
Right.
Captain Boyd, yes. He died some years ago. And then I obviously got back to the unit, got back to unit, and I was back on radio, teaching radio,
right.
Radio operating and so on. So we were there until early in January. The regiment, the unit, was disbanded, the RGH,
right.
At Sidi Bish, and. I got a transfer back to my old squadron, H Squadron, and went with them to Cyprus. First of all to Port Said, and from Port Said by boat to Cyprus.
Right, sorry, this was H Squadron.
With H Squadron, and we joined the 8th King's Royal Irish Hussars. And I was there in C Squadron,
right.
With... The squadron leader being Major Huth, H-U-T-H.
Right, so tell me about this. I mean, why were you in Cyprus?
I don't know. The regiment itself had been up on the front when these big battles I
right.
mentioned, and they were at the bottom of the line around which Rommel advanced. He approached and he came round the bottom of the line and then up. It was... The bottom of the line, I forgot what it was called now, but the Free French were also there. They got a bashing. 8th Hussars got a bashing, and they lost a lot of tanks. And they had been up the desert quite a long time. So I think perhaps they sent them to Cyprus to train in different type of country, meadows, fields, hedges, highways, hills, mountains, which was... Not the same, far different from the desert.
Yeah. So, whereabouts in Cyprus did you go to?
We were, I would say, roughly halfway between Nicosia
uh-huh.
and what was the port where we docked.
Not Limassol.
No. Well-known place. I can't remember. I don't think it's in the diary anyway. because we landed at the port on the island, and we were camped somewhere halfway between the port and Nicosia, the capital, where we did some training in armoured cars up into the mountains, which was totally different from the desert, of course, which I enjoyed. I got stuck up in the mountain one night with an armoured car in the ditch, and I couldn't get through on the radio for some reason. So the next morning, I could hear a car coming up the pass, up the mountain, and it stopped. And I yelled down from the top of the mountain, down to this armoured car, that we got stuck, and they heard it. So so eventually we got out of that one. And
Just three.
Right. A driver, a commander, and a gunner.
Right.
That must have been a decent thing.
What did you think about being in an armoured car after being in
the armoured car was... it was a South African armoured car. Not heavily armoured, of course, and only with a machine gun, or sometimes a 20mm gun captured from the Italians, probably. And
training did you do on those armoured cars? What were you, you know, what was the sort of scenario of what they were preparing you for?
Well, we went up in the mountains and pretended to be looking for the enemy, I suppose. It was a sort of reconnaissance task, and you had to look out for the people who were on the other side. There were quite big schemes that were held involving more than just the RG8 or the 8SRs. Other people were involved as well. so that, yes, I suppose it was useful. And of course it was the use of radio as well, because in the mountains you found that the radio could be unreliable because of the terrain. You get behind a mountain and you probably wouldn't get through on the radio.
Yes. Did you have any idea where you were being prepared for action at, you know, where you might be going?
I'm not sure whether we knew at that time. Because after the Cyprus interlude, we went back to the desert and near Benghazi, because the 8th Army then had been advancing well west, and we went to a position near Benghazi in the desert, and not too far away from a big Liberator base, American Liberator base, where where the big four-engine jobs were moving about all the time and creating tremendous amount of dust, a red dust, and it was all coming our way because of the prevailing wind, so that everything we had became tinged with red. I'm not sure whether that is tinged, but I did have certain books or documents even until recently, which were tinged with this red dust. So we were sent back there, you see.
You were still with your armoured cars, were you?
Yes. Armoured cars, yes. Because we were then on the watch out for some Italians who'd been sending over miniature subs and attacking whatever they could attack. For instance, at some time or other, they got into the harbour at Alexandria and hit the Warspite, I think, the big battleship, and one other. I know it was stuck there for a long time because it had been hit, but they kept quiet about this at the time. So we were there guarding against crews from miniature subs, and I think one was discovered. But that was about all.
When you say you were guarding against, were you sitting...
Well, no, we would send out patrols.
Right.
And we would obviously wait for reports from other people involved in the same thing, probably.
Right.
So, after a while, they decided we would have some better armoured cars. So we set out and drove all the way back to the Suez and picked up some new armoured cars... which were British, Daimler and things like that, and went back up the desert, all the way back up. And on the way back, I was ill again. I was vomiting and a terrible headache. And I was stopped off and put into a sort of medical centre there. And they had some beds and so on, and I was led there, and I was a couple of days, and then they sent me up to hospital at Barchi. So I was in hospital at Barchi for a fortnight, and then I rejoined the regiment. I was then sent on a week's convalescence at Derna, which was a rather nice, because they had a cinema there. So I was there at Derna for a while, and then I rejoined the regiment. And the regiment then went back to the Nile Delta, and we caught the liner, the Duchess of Richmond, and came back home. Duchess of Richmond.
And you came back to the UK.
And we came back to the UK.
What was that journey like? You went down through the Indian Ocean and around the Cape.
Oh, that one was when we went out there, yes. That was we went home through the Suez Canal and through the Med.
Right.
And we stopped off the foot of Italy. What's the island off the foot of Italy?
Sicily?
Yeah. We stopped there for several days for some reason. There must have been some danger somewhere.
Yes.
So
what
we...
What did you see of the war on your way back on the Duchess of Richmond? What did you see in Sicily? You know, did you get an impression of what had been going on?
No, nothing at all, no. So we arrived back in the at Liverpool, I think, this time, and we then had some leave and rejoined the regiment, which was now in Norfolk, which was a training area, of course, so big areas of land which you could use for training tanks and so on. And a firing range. So this time we had some new tanks, Cromwells.
Right.
Very reliable.
The first time you'd seen
these, yes, very reliable tanks with a bigger gun.
Yeah.
Rolls-Royce engines. And we did exercises in those and firing on the ranges. And then we moved to Bognor. Mm-hmm. This was right down on the coast, so we knew then that something was going to happen.
Yeah. And this, what year would this be?
Oh, this was 44, because I got home for Christmas at end of 43, then rejoined the unit at up in Norfolk.
Yeah.
In the winter, that was. So, yes, that would be...
this was spring 44.
Spring 44.
So, did you do exercises at Bognor, or were you just...
We didn't do a lot of exercises at Bognor, and I was in charge of the whole of the regimental radio. I'd been appointed regimental signal sergeant. So I was responsible for the radio communications, and again... I was made CO's operator.
And who was your CO then?
CO, oh, excellent man, and an excellent adjutant. I was in the tank with the colonel and the adjutant.
Yeah.
And let me see, the colonel, yeah. I'm trying to think of the name of the colonel. He was such a brave, totally unmoved man.
Yeah, never mind, it'll be on the record.
Oh, yeah. I've got pictures of him, and I was with him, and I,
yeah.
And the adjutant too, another excellent guy.
Mm.
And he was Jack Lardenberg was the adjutant.
Right.
So after a while at Bognor, getting the radio organised, we moved to Portsmouth. And into a wood near Portsmouth, obviously waiting for the day. And eventually the day came and we moved out and went down to the docks. And I was there overnight.
And was this, were you going off on day one or?
No, this was, let me see, a day, I think it was late in day two. So we arrived on day three.
Right.
So late in day two, I'd spent the night. Yeah, I spent the night there the area was evacuated, and I think I spent the night in a shop window. Slept in the shop window.
Right. Did you know? I mean, you'd heard about the landings by then, had you?
I suppose we had. Yes. And then we one day we got on the a landing craft. I think it carried 9 tanks. My tank was the first on, and therefore the last off.
Yeah.
So I think we had 9 tanks on the landing craft, and we set off from Portsmouth. This is one of the biggest disappointments of the tour, you see. On the landing craft, I had the driver, Ken Lloyd. I shall see him tonight. He lives in Cheltenham. And the operator, the sub-turret gunner, Ian Shanks. I see him occasionally, but he lives in Scotland. And the colonel and the adjutant. Well, the colonel and the adjutant were on the boat somewhere below deck, I imagine. I was on the deck, on the top deck with the tanks and the other two members of my crew. And at night, I sat in the tank in the turret and the driver sat in his seat. And we had a horrible night travelling across the channel. A very bumpy ride it was too. The sub-turret gunner, he got on the back of the tank and lay down on a camouflage net with a tarpaulin over him. He had a perfect night's sleep. And Ken and I were rocking about inside the tank. One of my big regrets of the war, that is.
Yeah. Had you been briefed as to what you were going to encounter? I mean, the fact that you were going to be coming off on beaches?
Well, no, not really. We heard on the radio, I suppose, something of what was going on the beaches. But when we arrived off the beach, we were the last tank to get off the landing craft. The other tanks had got off okay, but by the time our time came, we'd hit a sort of area, a shallow area over a hump in the seabed, and we got stuck on that. So we had to wait until the tide came in and lifted us off this hump, and then we got ashore, but we had a very deep wade, and the water didn't come in, but it tried hard. I remember putting my thumb over a leak on the side of the tank to stop the water coming in as I went up towards the beach. So up the beach we went.
I'll stop you just there, sorry. Douglas Gerrard, end of reel 3. Douglas Gerrard, reel 4. So, as you came into the shore, what could you see? What was going on? Was there action?
There was some shelling, not very much, and not near us. So we didn't hear much of the war, apart from a little shelling, which we were not worried about. But somewhere along the coast, my brother was in a cruiser, a naval cruiser, and he was responsible for shelling the shore.
Yes. Yeah. So, did you have any idea where you were going to be deployed, or what were your instructions as you came?
From the beach, we went somewhere near Villers Bocage.
And what was that journey like? There was
true. No. The first place we went to was the town of No, not Con. I've been there since.
Yes.
We were there for a short while, and then we went to Villers Bocage, I think. Villers Bocage. And there was quite a lot of fighting going on. But the thing about that fighting, you couldn't see what was going on because of the trees and the hedges and the banks. Not like the desert, where you could see all the tanks firing at each other, but in the close country of the Bokar, as it was known, it was a different matter. You could be hit and not know where the shell came from.
Yeah. How did they deploy you, and what information did you have about the enemy?
Any information we had about the enemy would come from our forward troops, from the forward squadrons. We might get a little from divisional headquarters because we were divisional reconnaissance and therefore attached to, linked to division, rather than brigade. Brigade was the County of London Yeomanry and another unit. So we were linked by radio to divisional headquarters, and they would be receiving information from their forward troops. But I didn't realise what was going on very much because I was only linked to the squadron headquarters of the three squadrons. So I really didn't know quite what was going on. But we could see the planes coming over and sending down, what did they call? What were they called? They weren't the Spitfires. They were not Hurricanes. Some other plane which was attacking the tanks with a guided bomb or something.
Were they typhoons?
Or typhoons. Typhoons. We were watching the typhoons coming down and attacking the tanks. So that lasted a while. Then we moved about a bit, went through some of the villages that the RAF had laid flat, and through those villages, and Odon was another one we are near, and we were outside Caen for a while. That was a bit dangerous because we were stuck and we were being shelled. Quite a lot, yes.
Were you able to find targets that you...
Well, not really. We were too far away. Mm. We were outside the town, and the enemy was invested in the town. Mm. But eventually, we did go through Caen, and it was knocked about quite a lot. And out to the other side, and eventually, we went streaming across France into Belgium.
I mean, you were living in a very constrained area, weren't you?
I know that at night we would, on occasions, dig a big trench and sleep in that. On one occasion, we dug a big hole and put the tank over it so that we were actually underneath the tank, which was not a very good thing to do. But we managed okay at night. It was a question of a very early rise to start the activities of the next day, you know.
Would you have a routine? Did you have to, was there sort of a care routine of the tank or replenishing things? How was all that done?
Well, we would radio for supplies to come up when the condition was right. We would make sure that we were in a position to receive the lorries with their petrol and ammunition and food and water and so on. So that was arranged at a time when they could get to us, you see.
Were supplies ever a problem, or did they always...
Not really. Not like it was in the desert. There we were down to absolute basics, but... No, we did get some local food, of course. We got some cheese from the farmers, and I'm not sure whether we had bread, but the supplies were quite good. They had special packs of stuff that we could get, and it was all there.
So you'd be quite a little sort of family, your tank crew, as it were.
Oh yes, we were living together. Although the colonel and the adjutant didn't actually mix with us very much. So they would be on the other side of the tank discussing tactics or whatever, what to do, while we would be on the other side and doing some cooking, you see. We'd cook for them.
And what could you cook?
Well, what could we cook? Well, if you had, let's say corned beef, you could heat that up, or you could make it into a, with some flour, you could make it into a, well, what would you call it?
Sort of pate.
That's right. You could coat the slices of corned beef, coat them in flour. Yes, you'd mix up flour and water and a bit of salt, and you could fry that, and that was quite nice. And the tea was a mixture of tea and powdered milk, actually, so you didn't have to worry about carrying tea because it was already mixed up with powdered milk and sugar. I don't know what we had from sugar. I mean, we maybe done all right, but we would every now and again we might get an issue of chocolate. And we would get cheese from the locals, and possibly milk.
Right. Did you see much of the locals?
Not really, no. A lot of their animals were killed, of course. And I know that in one place in Normandy, we were in a field which was, the area was shelled from time to time. And there was a cow in the middle of the field that had been killed. And it was beginning to smell very badly. So we decided to dig a big hole and get it into this hole. Well, we dug quite a lot, and we were thinking of putting the cow into this hole when we got the orders to move, so we moved.
So did you get to have any contact with infantry or other regiments?
Not a lot. Mm. We were scattered, you see, around, and somebody in the next field, behind the next wood or copse, you wouldn't know, and the only communication we had was radio or dispatch rider. Well, we had to be a bit careful with the radio so that you had wireless silence quite often.
Yes.
To avoid leaking plans over the air. So, because the Germans said they're not all that far away. So wireless silence imposed quite a lot, but when you were actually on the move and advancing, you were able to use the radio. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Did you kind of come across Germans very often, or were
they the intelligent? No, I don't remember much at all about seeing any Germans at all. Mm.
They'd have heard you coming.
Yes.
So you went up through Normandy?
Yeah, we went through to...